Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Simon Brand.
And I'm Rob Enough. We're back again for another List Builder Studio. We're super excited. We've got Simon on. He would never say this, but he's one of the best players in the UK.
Do my best.
You obviously heard Simon when we did the Rakan Army review not too long ago. Well, why don't you kick us off, Simon, by, you know, who are you and where are you from?
Simon, Cy Brand, either. I answer to most things. So, yeah, so I live in Oxfordshire in the UK, in the Shire itself. So I've been playing Kings of War since basically the death of Warhammer when they killed the Old Worlds. That was my passage into Kings of War through a clubmate, as we were all desperately trying to find something else to do with all our little toy soldiers. Yeah, so had a few games in that, started playing first. So that would have been, well, I don't know, 2018, something like that, maybe. I can't remember exactly when it happened. And just played club games and stuff for the first couple of years, and then just started to dip my toe into going to tournaments, which was fun. Yeah, the scene was really welcoming, as it, you know, as I hope it still is, and I hope everyone finds it to be that way. And yeah, just enjoyed the game and have since just kind of upped my involvement year on year. So started running my own tournaments three years ago. So the Pride of the Shire tournament, held up my old rugby club, which is fun. And yeah, so got involved with helping to be one of the more junior members, I'll be honest with you, of the organizing committee for Clash of Kings in the UK for the last couple of years, which has been a godsend of fun. And yeah, being caught up in the Steve Hildrey whirlwind is an experience for everyone. So, but yeah, it's been good fun. We got a good team there, and just kind of being able to put together, you know, such big tournaments, such a big event, you know, like literally the event for Clash of Kings has been a lot of fun. So, and yeah, and we're kind of growing strength to strength in terms of tournament organizing, in terms of playing and stuff. I started with my Warhammer armies and was just converted them over, dabbled with various bits of armies in version 2. So Night Stalkers, back when they were a completely different army, they were surging and yeah, it's totally different. Some Twilight Kin as was back then, played a bit of that with the old chariot hordes that everyone hated. I briefly dabbled with that because I'm not a monster. And yeah, version 3 came along, and like I said in the Rakan review, tried a bit of stuff but couldn't really find an army. I was like, nothing's really kind of grabbing me in version 3, and didn't really quite know which path to go down. I tried a few bits and pieces, but realized that, you know, I was properly invested in Kings of War and that I wanted to buy a Mantic army and support Mantic. But the Mantic journey to, you know, some really nice quality miniatures was still an early-ish stage at that point, I think it's fair to say. If I was going to paint a bunch of stuff, I needed to like the miniatures, and I wanted to support them, so I wanted to be a Mantic army. So I had a look around and found the Veerin. I thought I quite like these. There's quite a bit of plastic. I'm a inveterate converter. My painting is kind of, you know, I'd say pretty bang average, middle of the road. It's good for tournaments. Looks half decent. I'm happy with it, but I'm not going to win painting awards. And I admit that, and I know that, and it's not something I enjoy. But converting stuff, I'm all over it. I love it. And so having a good range of plastics for Rakan was like, oh, I'm keen on this. Played a few games of them, trying them out on Universal Battle, and found that I really liked the style of their play. And this was about the time of COVID lockdown, and yeah, I was fortunate enough to be furloughed here in the UK, so was paid to not go to work, which sounds amazing and was amazing, but also very boring. But that gave me a whole bunch of time to just, you know, churn out this Rakan army. And just from that moment on, I've just, almost exclusively played Rakan. I've, you know, jumped in with different armies here or there, but I always kind of tend to fall back on my Rakan because I had a, you know, really a nicely painted army that I was really happy with. Really like that style. and, you know, been to Masters a few times with, you know, varying results. You know, I've won a bunch of tournaments, you know, placing pretty well. So, yeah, I'm kind of like your kind of there or thereabouts, not necessarily the Chris Lynch, Tom Robinson level, but, you know, I hold my own. I've beaten Chris Lynch a few times, which I'll just drop in there because it's always worth doing.
You've been at this for a while because, you know, the website shows that you've been playing since 2016, not too long after second edition dropped in 2015.
Yeah.
And you're currently the 43rd ranked player in the UK, which, you know, may not sound like a lot, but there's over 300 players.
It's one of those years where I've not been able to. I've only actually got three scores. So your Cow Masters ranking in the UK is based on four tournaments, and I've only actually been to three yet. So I've still got to get. I'm going to one tomorrow, the Wars of the Roses here in the UK.
I was going to ask you about that because the last couple of years it looked like you've been 10, 11, 12 tournaments.
I've literally only been to three tournaments, one of which was Clack, which I've helped organize but also played in and did pretty well at. And so, yes, I'm still due a score. So I'm hopefully this weekend, although when we come to what I'm playing, which I'll talk about in a bit, it's going to be a bit more of a challenge. I've set myself a challenge, put it that way. So hopefully, yeah, I'll get a decent enough score. And what, you know, wherever I come, I'll get a bit more of a score and I'll hopefully just bump me up a bit. You know, a decent score will get me into Masters contention this year. Might be able to squeeze another tournament in by the end of the year. It's just been one of those years where the tournaments haven't meshed with when I'm free. So
that's life, you know, when you got family obligations and stuff, sometimes it just don't work out. But, you know, you finished 15th at Clash of Kings, highest finishing Rakken player.
Yeah.
5 wins and a loss, I think. So
that's right, yeah.
Pretty solid go of it. And I did look at the Rakken ratings. You're not number one, but I think that's just because you haven't been in enough events.
Yeah, last year I played Rakken a lot, like a lot. And this the start of this year, I was just like, I just want to just change things up a little bit, try a few different other armies. So I took Rakken to Clash because I wanted to take Rakken to Clash. But I think that might be the first time I've played them this year at a tournament, maybe. Can't remember. But I've just dabbled in a few other bits and pieces of kind of these armies that I already have. And so, yeah, so I've not really kind of focused on one thing, not got to many tournaments. It's been a bit of a funny year for me this year in terms of the tournament scene. But, yeah, and running one my own and then running Clash has kind of been taken up a big chunk of it, so.
If you look back, you have run Rakken a lot, but you've also run a lot of armies. And let me talk about that, because it feels like you do have a little army ADD.
Yeah, a little bit. I've got a bunch of stuff, and I like to use it. I tend to always fall back on Rakken. And as we talk about, you know, getting to the kind of my ethos of building armies, since playing Rakken, I've quite often found that I'm going to start and build a new army. I'm going to try something new here. I kind of put a list together and I look at it and go, oh, this is kind of like a Rakken list. It's very similar to a Rakken list. You know, there's it does this and it does that and it does the other thing. And they're like, well, it kind of Rakken do all those things. I've kind of found my, I suppose, comfort zone, the way I like to play and the style of it and the style of army that works for me. I now seem to be trying to transplant into other factions. And with, you know, some of them it doesn't work at all, but some of it does, and I've got a few kind of plans, including this weekend. I've written a list, so going to be taking orcs to Wars of the Roses as of tomorrow. So, yeah, the reason being, this is completely coincidental to the counter charge orc army review, which I listened to and then realized I've probably made a load of mistakes building a list. So orcs are very close but haven't yet qualified as best in race to go to Masters. It needs a reasonable score and they'll have enough points to get in to get over the 200 mark. So I was like, right, let's try and get orcs over the line. I wouldn't be best in faction even if I won the tournament, which is extremely unlikely. It's a very strong field. But I'm going into bat for the orcs to try and push them over the line. See if I can get orcs to qualify. But again, like I said, I've written a list and it's like, it's quite Rakken-y. It's quite similar to what I would normally have for Rakken. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting challenge.
That's a common refrain for you, though. You're probably thinking to yourself, did I just make a worse Rakken list?
Yeah. Sometimes it's a better, or at least bits of it are better, which I found interesting. So ogres is another thing I've been looking at. And this was, again, obviously this will come out once everyone's seen the Clash of Kings book. And ogres, obviously, before the Clash of Kings 2025 was Siege Breakers, and has been Siege Breakers for years and years. Siege Breakers, everyone takes Siege Breakers, Siege Breakers, Siege Breakers, Siege Breakers. And I was like, I'm going to build an army list that doesn't have Siege Breakers in it, because that is also the kind of thing that I do, which is look at armies and go, okay, it's a bit of a hipster thing, to be honest. I annoy myself for saying that. But, you know, it's best to know what you are. And you do try and find stuff that not everyone's running. Just try and find the little differences. You know, people haven't been running this. They've been running that. They've been running Siege Breakers because Siege Breakers are very, very good. They're obviously very, very good, especially when they were Speed 6 and when they were charging up the Warlocks. They were like, why would you look anywhere else? Well, because I kind of wanted to look elsewhere. So the Ogre Army I was looking at was, you know, originally based around a load of Hunters and a load of Red Goblin Blasters and some Shooters and stuff like that, stuff that I didn't really see in many Ogre lists. And I was thinking, okay, I think there's a way we can build something around this. And, you know, it leaned into the Ensnare. So again, similar to Ensnare in the Ratkin list, had the big square, there's 40 mil square heroes to run around, like Brute Enforcers doing Ratkin. Had a bit of, had Stealthy from the Chariot Bubble. Again, Stealthy, you get Stealthy in the Ratkin list through the Plague Pots. And yeah, and Rally, I was going to use the Paymaster, who I'd never seen anyone use before. Now it's a different...
It's an upgrade to the Sergeant, and you have a command that gives Rally one. So you have the ability to go 17, 19, Hunter.
Or exactly. And that to me, yeah. And then also I was throwing Barkskin in as well, because I wanted to, I didn't see use Barkskin used very much, and I think it's a very underrated spell.
On a Hunter, that's great. With only defense 4, they're easier to get off.
Yeah, exactly. Although I found, actually, funny enough, it kind of, casting on defense 5 stuff, you still get a couple, and a couple of extra nerve is nothing to be sniffed at. But yeah, with the Hunters, you know, if you've got Ensnare, you've got Rally, potentially now Rally 2 with the command dice, or at least Rally 1, you've got some Barkskin on there. That's a tough old, and they'll be Stealthy. That's a tough old nut to crack for a lot of units. So I've not really run them. This is all a theoretical army at the moment, but just to kind of exemplify the fact that, you know, I'm writing lists that end up looking quite Ratkin-y if I'm not careful, yeah. Or deliberately, one or the other.
Well, with that preamble, are you ready to go into the List Builder Studio?
Yeah.
The List Builder Studio.
All right, well, here's the first one for you. You know, what draws you to an army? Is it the models, or... I'm going to guess here, though, it's probably just, is it too fashionable? If it is, it's not for you.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, I think that's definitely the case. So, yeah, so what draws me to an army is, I guess I'd call it like a hook. Like, you're going through the army list and saying, and especially if it's something that's not necessarily seen in a lot of places, I'll be like, I think there's something there that you can work an army around. And, you know, especially with the advent of like Universal Battle and stuff, it means you can just try all sorts of mad, crazy stuff. And so, yeah, it's kind of like, I try not to necessarily go down spam army routes, although with Ratkin it's a little bit difficult at times. But yeah, it's a hook. It's an interesting hook. I approach the game, you know, it's a game to play, and that both people playing will want to have fun and enjoy. I play to win, you know. Once we're playing the game, I'm playing to win that game. But I also want to have an enjoyable time, both for myself and for my opponent, whilst doing it. At least try to, from my side. And I find that one of the good ways to do that is to have an interesting list, and an interesting, both for me in terms of kind of like the number of rules or interactions that I can kind of bring together. I guess that's one of the reasons why I like Ratkin, because, you know, you've got your rally and you've got your tangle needs to be boosted up, and you need to, it's a kind of thinking man's army, a thinking person's army. And that's why I like Ratkin. And that's the kind of thing that I'm looking for elsewhere. You find like maybe a slightly underused unit and go, well, if I add this and this and also then this, then I think that's quite a nice, it doesn't always work. Absolutely not. I still maintain that there is a very, very good army in Goblins that uses lots of Morbeast regiments. I still maintain that there is something there. I haven't been able to work out quite what it is, but the package of a Morbeast regiment, I think, is really, really good. It's like I can't speed 6, wild charge D3. It's got 12 attacks on 3s with crush 1 and vicious. It's just like, it just, for like something bonkers like 120 points, it's next to nothing. And I think there's something that you, for example, something you could do there that's really nice. I just haven't been able to quite unlock it. It's that kind of thing. That's my kind of ethos when it comes to writing to doing an army list. It's like, okay, what's going to be fun, cool, and interesting to play and be a bit different? Put something on the table that people won't necessarily have seen before, or a variation of something they've not seen before. Because, I mean, I remember back to like a Warhammer tournament, you know, 20 years ago or something, and I played one game. I was like, okay, that was a tough game and against some undead list. And then I rocked into the next game and it was the exact same list. It was 100% the exact same list. And I was like, all right, okay, that's not as much fun as I was hoping it would be, to be honest. So I would like to avoid that, especially when it goes to coming to tournaments. You want to play different stuff and kind of be entertained and have different challenges. So that's kind of where
I think there's something to be said, though. When you play something different, that gives you an advantage, because if you play things that people don't see often on the table, you know, you might be bringing a list which has got components that this might be the first time your opponent has seen some of this stuff, and they might not know what to do. You know, discussion about siege breakers. Well, everybody knows how to play against siege breakers at this point, right? I mean, we see enough of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, hunters, maybe not.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying also that I'm not just there for kind of fluff and fun. I'm definitely looking to kind of build a tactical advantage out of using less well known units and less well known combos, so that it does potentially, hopefully, just give me that little bit of a kind of bit of an edge when people aren't quite sure how to deal with it. So yeah, it doesn't always work, but it's fun trying. That's the thing. This is a hobby. I'm here to have fun and win.
So do you have any foundational concepts that you use in list building, no matter what army you're playing? This is where I start.
I think the thing I use as a foundation is the hook. It's okay. Whether that be, for example, so the orcs I'm running, the Wars of the Roses this weekend, it was, you know, I'd said I was going to run orcs, but, what am I going to do with orcs? Then, you know, they're particularly underpowered. But then I, you know, had a look through the army list and saw the God Speakers with drain life 4 can get up to drain life 7. I was like, oh, we can have a little drain life battery. That looks like fun. And they get, you know, and it was that little kind of seed that then grew the rest of the list from it. But I get from, but within that, you know, I think I'm not normally a huge fan of hordes. You know, Ratkin are slightly different because that's kind of one of the things they do very well. And I've run Trashkin lists of multiple, like 5, 6, 7 of Ratkin trash hordes, which I have run. But more often than not, I will look to run regiments of things. And I'll tell you another thing. I'm a sucker for, I want to make infantry great again. You know, I want infantry regiments to be a thing that people take, and quite often they're not. And I do like to try and include them. So my list at the weekend, because the regiments power up the Godspeakers, has 4 regiments of long axe in them, something like that. And so I want to try and see infantry regiments back on the table. And some of the things in Clash of Kings, I think, is going to really help that. Actually, you know, I think the introduction of phalanx. And the kind of anti-alpha that brings, I think that has helped infantry come in. But things like the new Abyssal's Sacrificial Imp, which gives full con, so the defense 6 for a turn against shooting, I think that will also help infantry build, I'm hoping. But yeah, and I do like to try and, so not having big monolithic things that are difficult to move around. So regiments is, I kind of like the smaller base stuff. That's kind of where I go.
So with your list building, are you trying to ask questions or answer questions? You know, are you a proactive player or reactive player?
I guess I'm probably slightly more of a reactive counterpunch player, which you kind of have to be a little bit if you're playing a lot of Ratkin. Yeah, I like to ask questions through the list quite often I'll be pushing my, having enough pieces that, I mean, that's another thing, having enough. I'm not someone who's going to run like a 2300 point 10, 11, maybe even 12 drop. It's too small. There's not enough pieces for me. I like to have enough pieces. I'd rather have more slightly weaker pieces to play with and to be able to position, to be able. So I guess in that regard, I'm not like, I'm just going to come forward and we're going to have a massive hammer and I'm going to punch you hard in the face and kill stuff. I will do that when the time is right, but that's not 100% how I will. And this is not how I approach building a list. I like to have a hammer in there. Normally my hammers will be like sitting second line. There'll be a second line thing. So tolerance of sharpness, for example, will not necessarily be up on the front line using their speed eight to project that big threat and scaring stuff, because something comes in and tags it, it gets chaffed up. I'd rather you charge into some of my more rubbish stuff and then I can hit you back.
Yeah. Are you conscious of the potential archetypes you might play against? You know, like the Alpha Strike, the shooting, does that enter into your list building?
Yeah, it has to be. So like I said, when I come up with these kind of hooks, these kind of interesting fun things that I want to write in terms of lists. And normally what happens is I'll go full bore. I'll go like, okay, yeah, it'll be, I want to run an entirely infantry based, I don't know, Brother Mark army. So I'll have 10 regiments of villain penitents, whatever they're called, you know, the really cheap things with crush one that hit on fives. You know, I'll go full bore and put absolutely tons of it in. And then you'll go, well, okay, but I'm going to come up across some ridiculous elf shooting gun line with Jack on support. So half of those are just going to melt in one turn. So maybe I need to knock down a couple and put something else in to counter that. So that will often be the way, is that I'll kind of lean really heavily into whatever my hook, whatever my theme is. And then as I trial it out, as I think about some of the things you come across, you know, you kind of need to have an answer to Defense 6. You're going to come up against Dwarves, a popular army. You know, you're going to come up against, you know, Siege Breakers, a popular army. You're going to come up against the Defense 6 line at some point. So you need to have some answer to that. Otherwise, you are going to struggle, you know. So those need building in. In terms of the archetypes, so Gunline, Alpha. Alpha is always going to be around. It's not necessarily something I'm going to play. So I just try and play a kind of disruptive game against Alpha. Just kind of give them bad charges, trade. And that's where your trading comes in. That's why I like to have more pieces. So, yeah. So most of the time, yeah. So I can see those are the ones I really kind of consider: Defense 6, Alpha, and high shooting armies. Because you need to have some sort of art, you know, to high shooting. There's some armies types or some unit types that I will just go, I can't cover all the bases. You know, you just, some things I'm just going to have to suck up and deal with on the tabletop. You know, it can't be dealt with.
Play for the draw if you have to.
Yeah. Or even not necessarily just, you know, if I playing Ratkin a lot, you don't have flyers. You've got one flyer who costs over 300 points. So I play a lot of games with no flyers. So you come up against an army who've got four flyers, five flyers, you know, two or three of them on small, nimble bases. And you're like, right, okay, well, I need to have an answer to this. And the answer can't come from the list that I build. I just, you know, even the shooting's not good enough to take it off at range. I haven't got speed 10 stuff to sit things down. I have to rely on the finding solutions on the tabletop in terms of how I deploy, in terms of how I position things, in terms of how I trade. That's how you deal with the questions that get asked by other people's lists that you can't answer in the list building, if that makes sense.
You mentioned Universal Battle earlier. Have you integrated that into your list building process? Is that like a tool that you're using to work on the list?
Yeah, sometimes, off and on. You know, I do play some of the play by email games with people, which is fun. And I haven't used it as much as I have done recently, previously. But it's just a useful tool. You know, like, for example, I don't want to go out and make and purchase and paint 8 regiments of more beasts because I think, I think there's something there. And only for it then to turn out, actually, that I can't get it to work. And I've got I've spent all this money and all this time on these more beasts. And, you know, it's a good kind of starting ground to try and work out things, to work out whether something's a non-starter or not, effectively.
Let's talk about combat groups. Are you one that when you're building an army, you see the army as forming into smaller battle groups that you might operate together in a smaller chunk?
To be honest, I don't really do that. I think especially with the introduction of more and more auras, the kind of armies tend to kind of funnel you down that route automatically. So I'll try and when it comes back to kind of thinking about some of the archetypes you'll face, I will have maybe I'll think about I'll need to deal with defense six somehow, so I'll need to have something that can hit or can work around and get a flank, and that will be one of three or four units. So that doesn't necessarily mean that I will deploy them all together in the same way every way. One thing I kind of struggle with sometimes a little bit is clock. I often get a little bit close to the clock and end of the clock because of, especially with the kind of armies that I play, revolve around a lot of fine positioning of a number of units. So it would probably be easy, to be honest, if I had battle groups. I just go, right, this is all going here and this is all going here, and I'm just going to do whatever I do. I think tomorrow with the orcs, I think it's going to have to be a little bit like that. I think it's going to have to be, I'm just going to have to do my own. I'm going to have to be less of a reactive player and just, you know, as you said on the counter charge army review, it's just like, if you're not sure whether you should just charge, you know, that kind of style. I think I'm going to have to, it's a bit out of my comfort zone, and I think I'm going to have to play slightly differently to that regard and not kind of push myself too thinly elsewhere, which is, I'm sometimes kind of guilty. I was like, oh, I can go and get that token and that token and that token. I know that's kind of slightly moving into kind of play and tactics, but in terms of army groups, it's not necessarily something that I can see the benefit of it, but it doesn't tend to be how I end up playing. So there's no point in building an army around them.
Let's go in and dig in on the concept of number of units, right? Because something you're obviously very keen to talk about. Let's start with the number of scoring units and, you know, where's the place for individuals in your army? And just because I know there's a tension there, right? Individuals do have a role in some armies, but they're not scoring.
They do. Yeah. So normally I have one individual. I'll kind of push an individual. There's some lists where I've pushed a two, but that's because they're providing specific auras. That's why individuals are in my list. I very rarely take like a combat individual. I know people do. I know people use them very, very well. I tend not to use them particularly well. But I think if you can get one individual in just for that individual, whatever the individual pivot and the 360 degree field of sight, I think it can be super useful. But playing Rakim for so long, your choices are pretty, pretty limited. The War Chiefs on a flea bag is okay. It's cheap enough, but I think at that point, you almost want to be paying more for a better individual. The cost you're paying for a War Chief on a flea bag for speed 9, which is great, but that's not speed 10, and it's 5 attacks on 3s with crush 1, it's really not, you know, you're talking about 135 points or something, I think, off the top of my head. It's really nothing. I think I'd rather be paying 20, 30, 40 points more for a, you know, the equivalent of a berserker, dwarf berserker lord on a Brock, you know, all of us, or an Abbess on a Panther, or, you know, something that just hits that bit harder or has that speed 10 or something, you know, if you're spending points on an individual, it has, in my book, in my list, it really has to be bringing something of a force multiplier to the army. Just having someone who runs around and does two or three wounds to a combat, I'm not really that interested in. Sorry, to circle back around to your question of scoring units. Yeah, I love scoring units. The more the merrier. I will drop. It's one reason why I like regiments over hordes, because it gives you more scoring units. And the difference in unit strength there is negligible or better in terms of, so two units will be more expensive than a single horde, but you have two units that can score. In terms of an absolute number, I would normally try anything in terms of unit. No, we're talking about scoring units. Yeah, it's got to be at least kind of 14 minimum, really, for me. Anything less than that, and I'm struggling to play the exchange game to win games. It's partially the Ratkin in me that you are willing to chuck anything anywhere so long as you win the game. And you need to have those units that can get in the way and block stuff and pick up tokens. And so many scenarios are about, you know, being in a certain place at a certain time with us, you know, sometimes carrying something or sometimes not. It's just being there. And individuals can't do that.
I mean, obviously, the next question I want to ask is unit strength, right? That's the next big thing. But I also want you to think about and maybe share with us the thought of durability, because, you know, unit strength is not all created equal. You know, there's unit strength 3 regiments that are defense 6, and there's regiments that are defense 2. And so, I mean, just talk to us about what you're looking for in terms of unit strength, and how does the factor of durability of that unit strength play into what you're trying to do?
I would like my unit strength to be, it's an obvious thing to say, you want your unit strength to be survivable in some way. Early in third, I was playing lots of lists that had multiple shock troop regiments rallied up. They're 15, 17, defense 4, given plague pots, and they were holding fire pretty well, holding their own pretty well. As third progressed and things got a little bit more alpha, I found that they weren't surviving. And so I switched out to hordes of Ratkin hordes. So, either warriors as was, wretches, which are super cheap, and, you know, but there's no survivability in them whatsoever. But you're basically trading a defensive stat, your defensive 4 up or 5 up or 6 up or whatever. You'd be trading that stat for your nerve stat. So defense 5, 15, 17, you trade that for a defense 2, 20, or, you know, they're 18, 21, aren't they? But rallied up, they'd be 19, 23. So effectively 23 is the number you're looking at, because for a wretch's horde, you're not necessarily looking at it doing much in the way of damage. You're looking for it to survive, and it will survive 2 turns, because unless someone is pumping an awful lot into that unit, hitting that much damage is hard to do. It's hard to do with when it's a dice game, you're rolling dice. With the stats of a unit, not talking about its unit strength, he's talking about its like defensive capabilities, the defense can be altered. Simple as that. You know, the melee to hit can be altered by being in snaring or by being in cover, you know, but making a hindered charge. Like you have a way that you can impact as a defensive player. And even now with some of the command dice coming in as an offensive player, if you can get ferocious charges off and stuff like that, more thunderous charge, you know, you can get, not thunderous charge, but ferocious charge, you can get better hitting. And as an attacking player, you can get crushing strength, more crushing strength, bane charm, thunderous charge. You can impact the chances, yeah, effectively lower the defense of the unit you're attacking. The one thing you can barely do that on is nerve. The only things you can do with nerve are brutal and dread. You know, yes, you can do some drain life, but that still relies on beating a defense value. But just straight up on cloak of death. Yeah, cloak of death, brutal and dread. The only ways to really affect the value of nerve, and that's a maximum of 2. So before combat starts, the most you can get rid of, the most you can lower someone's nerve is by 2. So having a decent chunk of nerve for not a lot of points, I think is a good way to go. And I think you're seeing that in a lot of lists. I think you're seeing people going for those kind of slightly more trashy units, because that nerve stat is all important, because it doesn't matter if you're defense 6. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, you can be 15, 17, defense 6, I do 4 wounds and then roll, you know, or 5 wounds and then roll a 12 twice. It can happen. Whereas if that was a worse unit with worse defense but a much higher nerve, you're relying on that 2 dice nerve roll to be nice and spiky to get them off.
It's interesting. I think you made an important distinction there. When we're talking about durability, people tend to think of defense, right? That's what they think of. Oh, I'm defense 6 or I'm defense 5. But the nerve value is equally important, or things like ensnare or phalanx.
I think the nerve value is actually the key value, that which is why, you know, a lot of my lists end up looking similar to that Ratkin, because I'm trying to get rally in. I think rally is amazing. You know, back in second edition or Avio, I always put the banner of the Griffin, wasn't it, for rally. You could just have a banner that put rally in. I was like, every list had that in, come what may, because getting that one extra nerve was just gold. You know, the Northern Alliance Talonar standard, rally on all those things, beautiful. You know, the new you know, looking at Ogres, like we said earlier, the Paymaster upgrade, which is now an upgrade for Rally, and you can get a command dice upgrade for even more Rally. I'm all over that. I'm all over those kinds of things.
And command orders is what I want to ask you about next. Obviously, the book's not out yet. You know, we haven't got a lot of games in with them. Rakan essentially now have a command that allows them to have Rally 3, right? To get a unit up to 3 Rally, which in that key situation, you know, that key combat, you know, you're really increasing the durability. And you mentioned, you know, changing the stat value of the enemy's defense. Well, now you have the ability to get, you know, Thunderous Charge plus 1.
I'm not playing with them yet. They're both interesting. I think the Rally plus 3, I think, is going to be actually kind of thinking on the fly a little bit here about it. But I think late game, that's going to be challenging. It's going to be challenging to have 3 Rally sources nearby stuff late game. But taking that initial hit off an Alpha Strike army, all of a sudden Rally 3, yeah, that can really help. So I think that's my sense of it, having played 0 games using it, is that it's going to be something where you've pushed your line forward, you know you're going to get hit somewhere, but by using that faction order, you can kind of go, okay, well, you can come in here, try and hit this unit if you want. You've got a choice of 4 units to charge, you know, with your punchy Alpha Strike, big hitting units. I'm not fast enough to stop you. I'm not fast enough. I need to get up in your face. I need to contest tokens. I need to contest sections of the board or what have you. You need to get good field position. And you're going to hit me. So I'm going to say, well, if you charge this one, it's going to be hindered because I've managed to position well. If you charge this one, I've managed position so you can only get 1 unit in. But there's the 1 unit that's stuck out by itself. You can't cover everything. Well, now that unit is now Rally 3. So you pick your poison. And then, again, that goes back into kind of how I play, which is giving people options and trying to give them only bad options. And so they have to take, and they feel that they have to then take the best, worst option, if you see what I mean. And the Blight will really help and will really go into that, which is the Blight's the faction order.
My assumption here is that you will be incorporating the thought of command dice as your list building, right? You obviously have the army specific ones and you have the generic ones. So, I mean, are you thinking that's what's coming next? Is you'll be thinking about the number of dice or what typical commands you're going to use and how you want to, I'm not saying you build an army around it, but you build an army in full knowledge of what you have available.
I think the faction orders are, they're obviously very different between all the different factions. From what I've seen, I think some are a little better than others, to be honest. And I think there are some armies that you can absolutely really go big on the faction order to try, you know, spend a bunch of points on your getting extra command dice and really trying to push for it. I think there's a lot of them where that's not really the case. I think you're not, for Rakan, for example, you're not going to be pushing super hard to get Rally 3. It's a nice thing to have on that one turn, but I wouldn't be necessarily pumping loads of additional points. I can't remember how much they is it 10, 20, 30 for the different dice for buying them?
With blue being the best, 30 points, yeah.
I can't see myself ever really spending more than 10 points on one extra dice because I happen to have, you know, 5, 10 points floating around and can tweak things to get that, just that little bit extra dice. And more often than not, I think I'll be using those on some of the more general orders rather than faction-specific ones because the armies that I'm using, for the most part, although the, you know, the ogres, this is all very new to me. So I'm just still trying to process it as you know, as it comes out. So, and I think it's the same for a lot of people. I think they're still trying to work out exactly how these command dice are going to fit in with their armies and the best way to use them and how you get the most out of them. So the ones that again, building lists that are a lot like Rakan, you know, the ogre ones, which is more rally and more brutal. So that's the kind of the additional fighting one there, isn't it? The additional offensive one. So yeah, so I can't see myself unless now I start playing elves or, you know, something terrible affliction comes over me and I start playing a horrible faction like elves. Everyone likes elves, right? So yeah, I'm going to get so much hassle for that now. But yeah, I think there's some factions where you can really lean in to try and get those faction-specific commands. I think a lot of them, it's a nice bonus. And that's the way I'll be looking at it.
From what you've said, I get the impression that, you know, you are an army of units, right? And it's less about the, you know, one specific super important unit like you may have in Green Lady. Like, all your units work in unison. Just because one had a dud combat, it's not the end of the world. If you're playing more elite armies, the commands might make more sense because, yeah, or might have more importance because that one singular combat might be more significant.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. You know, like I said, I play a lot of Ratkin. You can't rely on any of your units doing anything anytime you want them to. You know, this is an army that hits almost exclusively on fours, a lot of it on fives, a lot with very little terrain mitigation. You kind of, you go in and you win the grind. You know, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you blast through and it works brilliantly. The tunnel runners with sharpness have been monsters for me. They've been amazing at times, but they're not, conversely, also they've been hindered and they've lost their Thunderous and they just fluff around for a bit. So because of the armies that I've played a lot of, I don't have that alpha strike mentality of this is my killie. This is, I do absolutely build lists that have one killie unit because I know that I need to, will be at some point we'll need to kill a regiment, a horde of siege breakers or a horde of earth elementals or something defense six, or I'll need to chew through a naiad and snare a horde over two turns. So you need to have something that will do those things, but normally I'll have one of them and it won't, and they'll be there for a specific job rather than this unit goes in, smashes face, kills everything. And my army is built around that happening. That's not how my armies work. My armies work on, again, like we said earlier, slightly reactive. Okay, you try your luck, see what you can get, and I'm going to then take that punch and do my own plan. Using one of the big hitter units that will hopefully just, that's when it will just be enough just to tip the balance, create that hole in the line that whilst the rest of my stuff is grinding through, the one hitter unit can then kind of help mop up places. It's kind of how it's supposed to work. It doesn't always.
Consider the height of units when you're building a list.
I don't specifically go out of my way to buy higher, tall height units. I wish Ratkin, again, I'm going to keep talking about Ratkin. I play them a lot. They have very, very few options. You've got Vermintide for height one. You've got, you know, your large infantry and your tunnel runners for height three. All your infantry is height two. And then you've got a few, your one flyer at height six, one Titan at height six. And what, you've got a couple of death engines at variations at height five. You don't have a lot of options. So it's not something that I really consider, to be honest. Edge periscope is nice. If you've got a wizard with the right spells that you just want to keep safe, that you want to, you know, plinking over hexes or mind fogs or, you know, something that can just reach out and touch stuff and you can just sit behind your units and get over your opponent's infantry height two units. I think that's the only time I really think about height, to be honest, in the list that I'm building.
Let's talk chaff.
Chaff. Everything's chaff, right? This is Ratkin player talking. I think that the game has been in a place recently, and that might be changing, where the kind of classic chaff regiments have kind of slightly gone away. You know, I'm going to run up forward with a Snow Foxes regiment parked in front of my big hitty Huskulls or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And it's going to stand in front and you're going to have to kill it. And then I'm going to kill whatever kills the, you know, that kind of classic pawn chaff, as in P-A-W-N chaff, before anyone gets excited. You know, the chaff where you're throwing something garbage forward to do the exchange. I've seen less and less of that. I've seen people run maybe one thing that kind of scoots around the back, like gargoyles or a pegasus, that they can, then they can run forward to almost block a charge. But it's not necessarily the first thing that they're trying to do. They're not just throwing something forward to say, you kill this, and then I'll kill you. I've seen less and less of that. Because the issues of blocking your own units up, I think a lot of the, you know, top players realize that actually if I put something rubbish in front of my own units, there's a chance that it gets wavered and my guys are then stuck for a turn and I'm not getting the points return. I'm not one for a unit making its points back. I think that's a a slightly fallacious argument, to be honest. I think a unit can do nothing all game, kill nothing all game, and still be extremely useful. But that idea that you don't want your one-hitter unit to be stuck behind that chaffway unit that got wavered. Whether the command dice will have an impact on that, we were talking about a little bit about this beforehand, weren't we? With the maneuvering dice, where you can sidestep and back up your full speed, I think that might have quite a big impact, and we might see the resurgence of individual chaff units. Specifically, I'm talking about the swarm regiments and gargoyles and things like that. We might see a little bit more of those come back into the fore, but I think the issue was that people were realizing they were paying points that potentially could hamper them, but were also a little bit of a waste. They weren't achieving anything else. That's why I love Vermintide, right? Because they can always do something else. They can just sit there and eat the wheat and get nice wounds back on your own units. So they're a nice. I always try and get at least one, if not two, in a Ratkin list because they're super cheap and pretty good.
Do you give any thought to the opponent's chaff? I mean, are you putting anything in to clear their chaff?
Mind fog. I do love a mind fog. I do love putting mind fog in. For that, you might not necessarily be killing it, but a lot of chaff has fairly low nerve. So sometimes you're after a 10 with a shattering from mind fog. So I'll always try and get mind fog if I can, because it's really useful early game to block that chaff up. And then it's also really useful late game to try and take off those damaged units that have survived. I tend not to run shooting heavy armies. I have run armies with a fair bit of shooting in and didn't hugely enjoy it. So especially long range shooting. I don't mind 12 inch range shooting is fun and interesting, unless it's ice elementals, which is just nonsense. Freezing off ice elementals is just at 12 inch ranges, killing infantry builds. That's my little rant. Terrible addition to the game. But there you go. We'll gloss over that. Dealing with my opponents at chaff, I kind of often look at if they are running that, what I was just talking about, if they're running that, I'm going to put my units of rubbish in front of my units of good stuff. I will try and use that to my advantage rather than try and necessarily kill them off. So I will throw maybe I've got my one combat individual on a horse. I'll throw him in and block. So all of a sudden, I'm not going to kill your chaff. That's often what I'll try and do is if someone's plonking their Mastiff's regiment in front of their Shieldbreaker horde, I will try and use their chaff as my chaff, if that makes sense. So I'll go in and just try and keep it there, keep it in the way. I'll deal with something else around here. So yeah, kind of look at chaff in. So when I'm building my list, comes back to how I build my lists. That's how I'm considering chaff. Is I don't want to put stuff in that's going to get in the way of my own plans.
Talking about inspiring when you're building a list.
I think you probably need two or three that are going to stick around your main line. I can often find that I'm building, especially if I'm trying to find, like I said earlier, an army that's got a hook. Often that hook will be heroes or monsters, something like that. So it'll eat up unlocks. So I can often find myself struggling a little bit to fit the inspiring in that I really feel more comfortable with. Conversely, you can end up, because I want to build a specific build that has a specific hook. For example, like the Trashkin list with the Ratkin that had Broodmother, the Tangle, the Vicious Warchief, the Strider or a Birthing Daughter, and that's just to get that section of the army to work with lots, four or five or six hordes of infantry. You kind of need all those, at least three of those four, maybe not the birth, you don't necessarily need the Broodmother in that, but you need those three inspiring sources to get that bit to work. So you can end up with loads of inspiring. But because I don't tend to run armies that have dragons or, hitty characters, whether individual or not, that are running off to the far side of the field, I tend not to necessarily have to worry too much about it, unless I'm trying a real kind of thematic hooky build that means that I'm struggling with my unlocks.
Let's talk magical artifacts. Are you one that likes very little and they're an afterthought, or are you consciously adding them in, or are they situational? So just how do you handle magical artifacts in, as part of your list building?
So I know that the mantra these days is boys before toys, and I absolutely get it. I absolutely get, you know, I've said, already said that, you know, I like to have lots of units. I like to have good unit strength, you know, but I think that you can end up slightly hamstringing yourself if you're not careful by not taking certain magic items. You're already paying X number of 100 points for a certain unit. If you paid another 20, 30, 30 points, you could potentially make that unit a whole lot better. And you're just kind of investing in something you're already paying for. And yes, there's a sunken cost fallacy in there that you want to, this is so good. And that's the danger. You know, you've got your all of the Green Lady horde of knights that you've got Pathfinder on, and you give them Brew of Strength or Sharpness, and already all of a sudden you've got like 350, 400 point unit. And there's a danger that you can go down. You're kind of, I've already invested in this, so I must invest more to make the most of it. But I think the armies that I build are kind of regiment size. I'm not doing big hitty hordes of things more often than not. So I'm not paying that premium to give some of those magic items to a horde. So yeah, I'll know the kinds of things that I want to put on units. Like this orc army I'm running tomorrow, the fight wagon horde has got the Helm of the Drunken Ram on it because it's 15 points for Thunderous Charge 1. And the way I'm going to use it, hopefully, is as a second line hitter. So it's not going to lose that Thunderous and I'll get a chance to use it. You know, that kind of thing for the Ratkin. You know, Sharpness goes on the Tunnel Runners because why wouldn't you? Although there was this, you know, with some of the auras coming into that, obviously you've got to bear in mind that the auras that come in can replicate or even do better, but cheaper, what a magic item will do because you're affecting multiple units. I'm thinking like the Swarm Cry giving Elite. So Swarm Cry giving Elite to Tunnel Runners, it's not quite as good as giving it Sharpness. But if it's the Swarm Crier is boosting the Tunnel Runners plus a Brute Enforcer plus a Nightmare Horde, all of a sudden that's a lot better use of your points. So, and I also love to sprinkle in some of the 10, 15, the 5, 10, 15 point item, magic artifacts. I think that some of them can be real fun. And I said this in the Ratkin Army review, but Orb of Time Presence is just chef's kiss. It is my favorite, and I try and put it on in pretty much every army I can on a large infantry hero.
How do you incorporate spells into the list building?
Tend to not necessarily, again, unless it's a specific theme, I tend not to necessarily have loads of spells. I want them to do, I'm probably going to immediately say, contradict myself here, but part of it will be down to trying to find that hook or that theme. Like, for example, with the ogre list that I've got planned, that I'm kind of halfway through painting and stuff at the moment, but it was one of the reasons for doing that list and using hunters, using defense for ogres, so shooters or boomers or that kind of thing, is because I wanted to use Barkskin. I wanted to have that spell in there because I thought it was fun, thought it was interesting, thought it gave my opponent a challenge that they would have to find a solution to. Same with Scorched Earth. I've used that in my Ratkin quite a lot. It's a difficult spell to use because of that 18-inch range. You're not necessarily always able to get it onto the units that you want. If a spell, again, will have to have a specific job. Don't, you know, Mind Fog is great. It's 10 points for the most part, 10, 15 points. A lot of my lists won't necessarily even have native spellcasters in because, again, I'll be trying to build it around a certain hook. I'd like to have Bane Chant in just for that time that you get that flank charge. Or just Bane Chant that. But more often than not, actually a Bane Chant, even on a two-dice Bane Chant, isn't necessarily always going off. And even if it does, it doesn't necessarily add that many wounds when you're hitting on fours a lot of the time. Most of my units often do.
Let's talk speed and flyers. Put multiple speeds in. If you have an army that has flyers, or you're thinking about how you would use them and building them into the list, or actually worried about playing against flyers. So maybe start with speed first.
Speed, similar to a lot of the other stuff, is a lot of playing Ratkin is don't really have an awful lot of choice. It's your speed six for 80-90% of the army list is the same speed, and I've got used to playing that, so I know that's what I'm dealing with, and I can play accordingly. Yes, I do like to have a couple of differences in there, but they're not necessarily in there for their speed per se. Speed and nimble is really good. So I always used to try and run a Hackforce regiment for that, with the as was Macquarie's potion for Pathfinder, so it could get to interesting places. And I think the loss of that has meant I've played it a lot less. I played them with the Strider boots, but that's just one turn. And more often than not, they were moving through and into terrain to get to a decent position with Pathfinder and then charging out to it the turn after. Whereas you can't do that with Jesse's boots because you only get the one use of it. So that's kind of seeing them sit on the sidelines a little bit more. So putting speed into the list, it's nice to have. You know, I think it's not always the answer that people think it's going to be. Part of it is that I've run, and this is, but again, down to this is my, these are the lists that I play and the lists that work for me. But you know, you see someone's played a list and go, or quite often you've just been beaten by a list that does X, Y, and Z, and you go, that's amazing. I've got to run that because that works really, really well. I've had my ass handed to me by you know, super fast alpha strikey list with loads of flyers, and I've gone, oh yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to play in a flying alpha strike list because that's obviously what win games. And then you move up and you go, all right, come on, I'm going to alpha strike you. And you're against a decent player and they don't give you what you want and what you need. And you're like, what do I do now with all this speed? I can't charge in because I'm not going to do the damage that I thought I was going to do. So what do I do if I back up? They're just going to do the same again. And speed played well is really hard to deal with. But you have to play it really well to use it, to get the most out of it, I find. And again, talking from my experience of playing, well, say Ratkin, but playing slower armies. I've played a lot of games where my opponent has had the benefit of speed over me. And you can do things that counteract it pretty easily, but pretty well. And all of a sudden, think of it in terms of a points thing, they're paying points to make their units better at something that you've negated.
How do flyers and anti-flyers, you know, work, are integrated into your list?
Flyers are an interesting one. Again, Ratkin, not a lot of use for flyers. We've got one option. Good, who I love, and I've used him as a big distraction. You just run him around, lightning bolting things, and everyone's scared witless of him, because if he gets in the flank of something and doesn't do scud things and whiff, then he can just... And even in the front, 13 attacks on threes and crush three, yeah, you can take out a regiment in one go. So people can be scared of it. Mostly my experience of using flyers is that I've run some of the, you know, seven attack, the Beast of Nature, the Halfling Muster Captain on Winged Arrowlers, those seven attack flying monstrous cavalry base, and they're great. They are so good. I just... not played a lot of armies that have access to them. My experience is more how to deal with them and how to negate them. So maybe they don't, when it comes to building a list, I maybe don't look at them and go, yes, I've got to have them in because they're amazing, because I know how you can counteract it.
Let's talk deployment. You know, how does an army's potential deployment affect list building?
I think a lot of people say you have to have a plan, and you do have to have a plan, but you know, some things will obviously need to sit with other things. You need to have certain inspiring by certain units. You know, if playing Ratkin and playing, you know, the ogres and other things that have, well, any armies that have auras or rally, things need to sit together. So you're obviously aware of that, and it doesn't necessarily force your hand, but it kind of guides you as to where things need to go. I know some people were like, when they come to deployment, they go, this deploys in the center, this goes here, and that goes there, and this goes there. And they know before they've even seen their opponent, the table, they know pretty much where things are going to go. And I'm not like that. I'm very much this is possibly slightly kind of reactive player in that regard, in that I look at the scenario, I look at the terrain, I look at my opponent and go, right, okay, how am I going to play this game in particular? And again, that's has its benefits and has its disbenefits, because it slows me down a little bit when it comes to doing the actual deployment. But I don't necessarily think consciously super hard about how I'm going to deploy things. I'm thinking about how things work together rather than necessarily how they deploy together. Again, it makes sense in my head.
Let's talk terrain and how that impacts your list building.
But quite a lot of time, you just have to suck it up. You know, the Jesse's boots will go in for one unit because you'll want one unit that can sit in terrain and charge, or charge out of terrain, or, you know, it's because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you have that one unit that can do that? But for the most part, I either play armies that have next to no terrain mitigation, or either all very specific terrain mitigation, like the expendable units for the Rakkin, or I've played a bit of herd, in which case you don't care about it, full stop. It's just like, what is terrain? You may as well just take all this stuff off the table because it means nothing to me, you know? To me, terrain is about how you play rather than necessarily how you build a list. But sometimes there are things that if I'm building a certain kind of list that I know that, say, has knights in it, and, you know, a reasonably hard-hitting knight regiment or that kind of thing, something with Thunderous that I definitely don't, that a unit whose combat effectiveness kind of falls off a cliff if it gets hindered, then I might think about putting in like a cheap 3-attack mounted hero on a horse, individual, basically not necessarily to do any damage, but just to run in and go, well, I'm going to stop you sliding into this terrain.
Traffic cop.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Yeah, yeah. Give him a little whistle and a flag, what have you. And yeah, so sometimes those go in. But actually, this kind of goes to something I've not really spoken about. I like my units to have multiple uses. So if I had a unit like that in, like a traffic cop individual, I would quite like them to be able to do something else. Now, that might be they have hex, you know, the trickster's wand, or they can give an aura to something, or, you know, it's back to that point I said about artifacts, where you're already paying points for something, so paying just a little bit extra to make them that much better is to me a good investment in points. So I don't necessarily like just ultimately 100% single use units. So one of my favorites was, I don't even know if you can still run it actually, was when I was running Basileans a bit, I ran a Paladin Chaplain on a horse with Host Shadow Beast 2. And he was 100 points, I think, on the nose. And he would run kind of direction for my knight units. But with that Host Shadow Beast, he can threaten units. He can threaten to sit down flyers. It's just that little bit extra for 10, 15 points more. And that's kind of where I look at. If I'm going to have units for that are going to be there to specifically mitigate terrain, I'd like for them to do something extra.
Well, let's talk scenarios. The type of armies you play is really all about the scenarios and attrition if it's an afterthought, right? You're probably you may not be winning the attrition battle.
Look at like the Clash of Kings results and look at a lot of the tournaments I go to, and I place guys nice and highly. But if it was based on you know, kill score or attrition score, then mine's kind of bottom of the pack, kind of middle lower of the pack. Just the armies that I play don't necessarily kill a lot of stuff, but I can win the tournament, win the game.
So in terms of scenarios, though, how are you consciously making sure your army can handle all these different, you know, we've got objective base and movement base, and we got loot token, bluff tokens, and now we have progressive scoring. So, you know, just talk to me about how you are working that in.
That goes back to the having enough units and having enough unit strength, because so many of the scenarios are based on those things. Having those large infantry heroes, great. Actually, he's really interested in the Brother Mark, maybe for next year. I'm contemplating that, because then I get the Ogre Palace Guard captain, who I think is a really nice character. You know, you've got your Northern Alliance Snow Troll Primes, who are just amazing. So, so good. And they are useful for carrying a Wolf Tower and Presence to give them unit strength too, so they can contest and raise where your opponent thinks they've got it safe. You know, all of a sudden there's a unit strength 2 thing there, rather than it looks like unit strength 1. Or it can run into another sector and contest it and claim it more so than your opponent realizes. But those nimble characters, I try and get those in. Nimble large infantry heroes, try and get those in wherever I can, because they're so good at scenario play. And even if they're not, they're so good at just throwing in front of stuff. so that you can still win the scenario elsewhere, even if they're not winning it themselves. They're also great at carrying tokens. I play against Ed Herzig quite a lot, who played a lot of Forces of Nature, and so I played against a lot of Scout. So I know that you need to have, this goes back to a little bit about the speed conversation, you need to have something on your front line that can reach out and touch over 12 inches in my book, because if there's a token in the very center, they've got something that can scout up or even not just run up and take it in that first turn and still be 12 inches away from my 6-inch, well, my 6-inch speed infantry, then they can just turn around and run off with it. And I'm like, I've going to have to spend the whole game chasing this down and trying to kill the stuff that gets put in the way. So you having speed or range threat to push that, push your kind of threat potential beyond 12 inches, I think is quite important. So I will try and, I'll try and bear that in mind. I'll try and put that in where I can.
How does playing on a clock affect your list building?
Probably not as much as it should, because I go for, yeah, it doesn't really, to be honest. And sometimes that chips me up, but I'd still rather get the right units in, get the play, the game, the way I want to play it, and then maybe occasionally run out of time. You play Ratkin a lot, you roll a lot of, you know, Ratkin hordes, multiple Ratkin hordes, you're rolling a lot of dice and picking out fives. It takes a long time, so try and get used to rolling faster. But a lot of that comes down, you know, so it doesn't affect list building, because a lot of it, that's down to playing and getting used to your army and being able to do the things that you need to do more quickly in the actual game itself. So I don't really take that into account. I'd rather just build the list that I want to have and then work out how to play it better and quicker.
When you're list building, are you considering the impact of a first turn or a turn seven?
Not a turn seven. I think a turn seven it's a 50-50 anyway. A lot of games are won and lost already by that point. I don't think there's necessarily an awful... I suppose having a mind... That's one reason why I have mind fogging for a late game, not necessarily a turn seven per se, but something that can go, you know, over there that's carrying all the tokens in the whole game apart from the one I've got, well, I can just, and it's on 12 wounds, I can just mind fog that off. So having mind... I love having mind fog in my list and try and get it in where I can. First turn, that goes more back to what I was just saying about having that speed and threat range to get over 12 inches because of the number of scenarios which have something on the center line, which have tokens on the center line. So being able to push out whether you get first turn or not. I'm building lists that can work either way, that can work on putting pressure on my opponent if they get first turn. So yeah, I don't think there's any point. I know you can build lists that go, oh, if I get first turn, I win. Well, that's amazing. Yeah, but what if you don't? What if you don't get first turn? All of a sudden, then you've built a list that doesn't function as well. So I tend not to really consider it.
How does the hobby side affect your list building? I mean, do you ever worry about, oh man, I painted this stupid regiment of Soul Reaver infantry and they got shot off in 2 seconds?
Does it affect my list building? Not hugely, no. Although this Ogre army I'm kind of putting together is going to be slightly more using, I'm going to try and put some nice looking models in it. So that's I'm going to put things in it. Not necessarily things that are bad, you know, putting a big deal mammoth in is not bad per se. It might not necessarily be exactly the most 100% effective thing. And there's maybe other things you can do with those points, but I'd quite like to have something in that's going to fit in nicely with the theme of my army. But having said that, I spent ages and ages Dremeling, green stuffing, converting up a mutant rat fiend. This is before Mantic released their official mutant rat fiend model from a goblin slasher. And I love it. I think I'm so proud of it. But I just don't think they're very good in game. So he doesn't see the table very often. Sorry, she doesn't see the table very often. The hobby side doesn't hugely impact what I'm building in terms of armies.
I mean, the mammoth's not too bad. And now you're getting an additional brutal, so you're at brutal 3.
So that thing I said earlier on about not being able to reduce people's nerve, all of a sudden, brutal 3 in Kozlo, and all of a sudden you're minus 4.
4 on the dice.
Funnily enough, so a friend of mine, me and Matt G, has been over to the States a couple of times recently, actually, to play, and whilst over there for work. We went to a doubles tournament where we took a proper nerve bomb. deliberately built this list, which is a bit nasty, which had, he had Ogres, so had Brutal and the Big Deal, so Brutal 2 and Kuzlo, and I had, my half of the allies was Forces of Nature, so I had the Green Lady. So you get Cloak of Death, Brutal 2 and Kuzlo for that -4 nerve. We managed to pull it off in a couple of times in a few games. That was nasty and fun.
What's the most overlooked thing that impacts successful list building?
I guess. I don't think it's necessarily a specific unit. I know I've talked about kind of theme and hooks for armies, but it's almost a kind of, what are you hoping to achieve with this army? Why are you playing it? And if that answer is, because I've got a load of really nice models that I really like the look on the table, brilliant. That's as good as a reason as any. But if it comes to specifically list building, having reasons for why you're doing what you're doing, I think it can be very easy to, and this kind of circles back around a little bit to my army lists, trying to find something a little bit new or different or at least unusual, because then I know there's a reason for putting stuff in there, rather than I'm just going to put in 3 Hordes of Swords Siege Breakers because I know they're good. Because they, you know, look at the stats, they're good. You know, I think that way you can end up, and I've done it, I've 100% done it. Like I said with that, you know, you've recently lost to an army, you go, oh, I'm going to run that. You don't run it as well because you're not really sure why those units are in there.
Every day we get new people coming to the community and they're like, I want to build a list for Forces of Nature or Rakan, and they want this silver bullet. When you're looking at this though, like, what is the one tip you would give to this new player to say, hey, you get all this advice, you need to focus on this. What is it that a new player should be focusing on?
Depending on what they want to get out of the game, put that aside one bit, it would be, how are you going to win? How is your army going to win this? You're going to put your army down on a table, it's going to look lovely, you spent ages painting it, but you're playing, at the end of the day, you're playing a game to win, or at least I am, and have fun. Absolutely, 100% have fun. You know, whatever it is, the point of the game is to have fun, the goal of the game is to win, whatever that phrase is, you know, I'm putting units down on the table because I want to win the game that we're playing. You know, I think anything less than that is slightly, shows slight disrespect to your opponent. If you just turn up, I don't care whether I win or not, I'm just going to shove stuff around. I don't think that gives your opponent a good experience. So for a new player coming in, I'd be like, okay, how are you going to win with this army? What is it this army is going to do for you that's going to win that game for you? Which I know is slightly kind of a slightly esoteric answer, it's not necessarily an answer that people would necessarily like to hear, but I think it's something that's well worth considering when you're building an army, putting an army list together. How am I going to win? Generally, there's no point in saying, oh, this army's going to be brilliant and dominate. Brilliant. What happens if you don't play dominate? What happens if you go to 4 tournaments, none of them have dominating, and your army doesn't work playing push or what have you? I've been to a tournament where my army was rubbish at push. First game, push. Got absolutely wasted. And it was a horrible experience because I was like, well, there's nothing I can do. You know, my opponent got first turn with fast army, got over the line. I was like, all right, well, because I'd written a list that, oh, this is going to be great. It does the X, Y, and Z. It was Empire of Dust, got Surge and all this kind of stuff. Brilliant. But the terrain set up and the scenario meant that, and my opponent's good play, I'm not trying to disrespect my opponent at all, meant that my army was never going to win that game. Because I hadn't thought about how I was going to win with that army. It just looked at it on paper and thought, yeah, that's really good.
How has your list building process evolved over time?
I'm better at spotting, and I think this is part of being part of the community for a long time as well. You see a lot of these posts about, you know, you hammer out lists between friends and, you know, enemies, friends and frenemies. And you talk about the lists that you build, and that's just, you can more quickly see where there's a weak spot, I think. So sometimes, like I say, when I come up with these hooks, go, oh, that could be really good. And I start plugging it into the Mantic Companion and build a list and go, no, that's not going to work. And I can see more clearly and quickly why something's not necessarily as good as I first thought it was.
All right. Well, next up, let's go through a specific list you've got picked out, you know, and maybe start us off with a background on this list.
All my lists are pre-Clash 25 update, so some things might be slightly out. And I talked about Rakan a lot, but I thought maybe I would talk about a not-Rakan list, actually. I'll go for a list I haven't run. Don't know how good it is, but I'm gonna throw it out to the mercy of the community and see what they reckon. and it's a Night Stalker list.
Really? Now, what drew you to this army?
Partially because it was a mixture of, I've got some stuff that I can use the standard as Night Stalker. So from a model perspective, I know that I can effectively run this list if I want to run it in real life. But also we talked about the nimble square-based heroes being so good that I wanted an army that had a lot of things. It's an army that gave me, that was kind of the hook to use a lot of those. But also I just wanted an army that had some doppelgangers in it, because I think they're such a fun unit to have. And they pose that question, which can very easily be answered, 100%. But I just think they're a fun unit to pose questions with. So, yeah, this is my Night Stalkers, 2,300 points, 29 unit strength, and 16 total units, all of which are scoring, in fact, looking at it. Like I said, not run this, so this is all very much theory hammer. So we start off with a regiment of doppelgangers with a Brew of Sharpness. Just think they're so much fun. I think with the new command orders for Night Stalkers, they can have Ferocious Charge, which could be just glorious. That's doppelgangers hitting on twos if they go hitting on ones even effectively. So, I just think that they, you know, the right unit, it's a backup. It's the equivalent of that kind of second wave hitty unit that doesn't necessarily look like a hitty unit. I just think it's such a fun concept that I really wanted to put it in. A couple of units of Scarecrow Regiments for unit strength, cheap, get in the way. Sit on units, sit on tokens, just generally be annoying and hopefully last more than a turn. A unit of Tormentors, a regiment there. Again, just because I think they're a fun, interesting unit that can ask questions that your enemy has to have an answer to. And then two troops of Phantoms. They are, like I said, one of the best chaff units in the game, I think. But they're not thick chaff, but they are, what would you call them? They're threatening chaff. They are, you know, defense 4, 12 attacks, melee 4, dash 12, speed 10 and nimble. If you don't deal with them, they're in your backfield. Just all of a sudden that's 24 attacks on fours and playing merry hell with things. So you just need to have something to deal with them. And they give you that speed 10 to threaten flyers, which, you know, again, I'm not normally used to. So this list is slightly different to kind of what I would necessarily normally run. So it's asking a few questions of me as well to get better with using these things. A couple of hordes of butchers, because I just think with the units that I've chosen so far already, lots of defense 4, lots of defense 3, not much staying power in there. So I think you just needed a couple of decent units that are not necessarily going to take up too much space. It's also partially a modeling consideration. I've got two units that are basically can be used as butcher hordes. Maybe one of those would be better being a horde or something, horde of infantry. What do you got? Bloodworms for a similar price. As we talked about earlier, that higher nerve value. So this is, again, that's something that I would maybe run this list a few times, maybe switch in that horde of bloodworms just to see how it fared in place of a butcher's horde. Yeah, just to play things out. A Shadowhounds regiment with the Helm of the Drunken Ram, because you're looking for that not to be hindered. So there'll be Thunder 2 with that Ferocious Charge. And all of a sudden, that's a really nice, nimble, hitty unit. It's one of those units that's kind of got slow incremental buffs over time. And it'd be nice to see it on the table, I think. Next is some Soul Flares with the Suggested Boots of Striding. Again, just a nice, interesting, fun unit and a fun asking questions unit with some Wind Blast in there to mess things up. Just trying to get around and position itself for those flank charges effectively, especially if you can get it with the new command to give it Ferocious Charge. If it's not going to be hindered, that's going to be hitting on twos. So that's really tasty. A Mind Screech, a Planar Apparition Healing Mind Screech, because there's one thing actually we haven't really talked about, and I probably should have mentioned, is trying to get wound mitigation in is something that I always try and do just to kind of counteract that, the chip damage, because chip damage can be really nasty for units, for some armies that don't have it. Conversely, when I'm playing, I like to have things that can put, if possible, put a little bit of chip damage onto stuff, because if you come up against a list that doesn't have wound mitigation, that's I look at it as I'm not trying to kill units with shooting. I'm trying to soften them up for melee. And Mind Screech in there really, really helps counteract that. And then it's into the large cavalry, large infantry, and then monster square base nimble stuff. So I've got one Horror Rift Weaver, two Butcher Flesh Rippers, and two Dread Fiends for that just swarm of annoying square based nimble stuff to get in places that you don't want to be. You don't want to get these things. You know, the Dread Fiends are nice bringing Dread into the list as well. Always, that's just, yeah, if you can get Dread or Cloak of Death in, that's always great. That comes in at 2290 at the moment. So 10 points to spare on maybe another dice. If I don't think I've got anything that can buy any dice then, to be fair, in that list. There's no, I suppose maybe a Dread Fiend or Butcher Flesh Ripper could. Yeah, again, so it was just I wanted to play around with the idea of having lots, like I said, lots of nimble square-based units in a different list to say Ogres or Ratkin or whoever else play it. And I think the Night Stalkers can run that really nicely. But in my initial writing of this list, I think I had three of Dread Fiends and three Butcher Flesh Rippers and, you know, was lacking stuff elsewhere. And I think that, and that was when I talked about in terms of my kind of list iteration, which was realizing that I was lacking too much in unit strength or lacking too much of a solid core, so I would just get blown away by proper Alva Strike. So things have kind of, I went in with that hook and I've just kind of slightly reined it back a bit to make it a bit more playable. So yeah, so that's the list.
Are you planning to take this to an event?
Maybe. I'd have to just do a bit of modeling work. It's a bit of a back burner list. I'll tell you what, the other thing, I'll run through quickly this orc list I'm taking. Maybe that might be a better one to be in actually. So yeah, so this is the orc list that I put together, and it's I know I listened to the Countercharge review of orcs and everyone was loving the Morax, and I was like, I haven't got any Morax in my list. So apologies to all the good orc players out there who are now screaming at me and telling me I don't know what I'm doing. But I've got four regiments of long axe with nothing on them, just as they come. A couple of troll hordes with the wave of mitigation, Dwarven Ale and Chalice of Wrath on each one. Gore Riders with suggested boots of striding, fight wagons with the helm of the drunken ram. So those are my two backfield hard hitters. I've gone for three war drums. I did have two initially, but I found that stuff just got out of range too quickly. And coming from Ratkin, I know the importance of rally and the importance of spreading that rally around. So two of those war drums have got Dread. I've got that one crudger on a gore for running around, being annoying, playing traffic cop. Didn't have spells, didn't have the points to give him anything. Like I said, I'd like to have given him Hex or something like that, maybe. They've got two troll bruisers, one with the Orb of Towering Presence. Like I said, those large infantry heroes, love them. Love one with the Orb of Towering Presence, trying to get it at unit strength two in places that will annoy your opponent. But then the kind of the hook that got me into running this list was these three God Speakers. One's inspiring. They've all got Drain Life. One's got Veil of Shadows, one's got Mind Fog, and one's got Hex. So Veil of Shadows is in there because it's a slow orc army, and against the shooting list, it would just melt. So I need to have something to mitigate that and something to stay alive to boost those God Speakers and allow them to drain life at max and then heal things that have taken some damage coming in from the shooting. So again, like I say, so that's quite Ratkin-y. You know, you substitute long axe for regiments for spear warrior regiments or shock troop regiments with the phalanx upgrade. You substitute trolls for nightmares or something. You know, you've got a couple of hitty units from the backfield that are like your tunnel runners, you know, and you've got units that run around and give rally. So it's, you know, it's quite a Ratkin-y army. So I'm just hoping to see whether I can make it work or whether, like you said earlier, it's just a worse Ratkin list.
Whenever we have a favorite army, that's what we always end up thinking about in the back of mind. Did I just make a bad version of my other list?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we'll include copies of the two lists that Simon shared with us tonight in the show notes. So if you're interested in his amazing Night Stalker list or amazing Orc list, and maybe we'll share your Ratkin list from Clash of Kings, which you placed 15th with. So if these other two suck, you can always fall back to, well, I do know what I'm doing with Ratkin.
Just stick to what you know, people. Stick to what you know. No, don't. No, just try stuff out. It's fun.
Well, there's something to be said when you try stuff out. Even if you're not the one learning to play that army, you learn some insight into what your opponents could do. You want to learn to play against orcs? Well, play orcs.
There's always something you can take from games. whether that's list improvements or play improvements, or you know, what, you know, my opponent did this, how did that work against me, why wasn't I able to stop it, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it'll be an experience going in as a completely novice Orc player.
Well, it's been a cracking episode, but before we get out of here, we got to do one more thing. Got to hit you with our rapid fire 10 questions. Are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
What's your favorite army?
Rakdos.
What is your least favorite scenario?
Push.
What drives you creatively or competitively?
Competitively.
When your opponent rolls snake eyes?
Happy but don't try and show it.
When you roll snake eyes?
Angry but probably do show it.
What is your favorite hobby material?
PVA glue.
What is your biggest gaming pet peeve?
Dice you can't read.
What other miniature war game would you not want to play?
Would I not want to play? Wow. That's controversial. Probably 40K.
If you had a romantic evening with Ronnie Renton, what would you whisper sweetly to him?
Who says I haven't? What would I whisper sweetly to him? That dwarves aren't as good as he thinks they are?
Been a cracking episode, Simon. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your infinite wisdom on list building. And hopefully people will be able to take some of these nuggets of wisdom you've provided and roll it into their own list building process. You know, I always give the caveat that like what works for me might not work for you. Hopefully you can take some of these things and transform them to make them fit in a positive way in the way we construct our own lists. So
yeah, it's been super interesting. It even made me think about how I think about stuff. So yeah, it's been good. It's been an interesting experience. So, I hope it's made sense, and I hope some people get something useful out of it.
And if you want to find Simon, I know he's on the Rakdos Army page on Facebook.
Yeah.
But he's also on Countercharge. He's on Fanatic, so he's easy to find. Or just go to the Kings of War Masters page and look up the 15th ranked player at the Clash of Kings. You'll find him that way as well. So
well, it's a great hobby. I'm always happy to chat hobby, both with yourself on Countercharge or with anyone who's interested. So yeah, find me at Clash of Kings 2025. Don't forget, get a plug in, otherwise Steve will kill me.
And there's a date now, right? And that date is
13th and 14th of September, I believe.
And do we know when signups are opening up?
We'll be selling tickets in January sometime.
Cracking episode as always, Simon. I appreciate you coming on.
Cheers. No, I appreciate it. Take care and good rolling, everyone.
All right. Well, that's going to do us tonight. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.